Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio.
To inform, inspire, and empower Alcoholics Anonymous sponsorship, locally and internationally, to be their very best, both personally and spiritually. This is the mission of RumRadio.org, an internet radio program dedicated to carrying the message of recovery to a world plagued by alcoholism and addiction. Alcoholism and addiction is the number one health issue in our world today, and RumRadio.org is actively participating in the solution. Interviews with a plethora of people sharing their experience, strength, and hope. Live Sundays at 9 p.m. Central Time and rewound again on Saturday and Monday. Tune in to 12-Stepology at its best on RumRadio.org.
Welcome and hello. This is Joseph G. with Rum Radio and RumRadio.org, the most comprehensive 12-step sponsorship in the known and the unknown universe. And tonight we have a little bit of an unknown universe. Our guest is a no-show. Things like that happen. It's just the way it goes sometimes. Miscommunication. Daylight savings time. Mountain Standard. Eastern Pacific. Whatever it was, the guest was not able to come. So right now, we're in the unknown universe. But that's okay, because we can handle that.
We're not going to drink over it.
Pardon me?
We're not going to drink over it.
We're not going to drink over it. There you go. I'd like to acknowledge WNAH, that's Hoyt Carter and Tony the Horse, afford us the opportunity to broadcast live to their listening audience in Nashville, parts of Kentucky, and Arkansas, Hatchet, Alabama, as a public service presentation. I'd also like to acknowledge RecoveryToday.net magazine, as it's one of the finer recovery journals that affords us some print space from time to time. I greatly like to introduce my co-host, Carol D., a family intervention specialist. He does a fine work with troubled families, and I personally believe the families are the basic unit of our society, and as the family goes, so does the country, so does the nation, so does the world. I belong to a particular religious sect, and the children are really kind of special in there. They really are. And I believe the reason why is that the family is so integral part of the church, of this church. And they'll tell you, first of all, first the family, then the church. The family is the center point of all understanding in this church. It's great. Kids grow up with correct principles. Now, you got to let them go eventually. But if they don't have correct principles to fall back on, they have nothing to fall back on other than the mean streets. Most of the prisons right today are filled with people from the mean streets that did not get these correct principles. Drugs and alcohol become their parents. It's shame, it's sorrowful, and it's costly to the nation in so many areas, financially, physically, emotionally, and spiritually. So Harold goes out to these families and he does the best he can trying to instill these correct principles first to the parents, and hopefully it'll trickle down to the kids. Sometimes it works, sometimes it's too late. But, you know, we give it a try, and that's what we do in recovery. This is not AA. This is not NA. Not CA. This is Rum Radio. We're closer to Paranoid Anonymous, and if you listen for the whole hour, you might think you're on epilepsy. When you fall asleep?
Narcolepsy?
Narcoleptics, thank you. I had a brain jump. Narcoleptics Anonymous. We just do Rum Radio. We use a lot of most of the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous as the template for recovery, because that is the basic template. All the 12 steps come come from that understanding, and then all the other 12-step groups evolve from that. So we like to use the basic template. Can use it for any addiction. It works fine. I've used it as a sponsor for SA and SLAA, SLAA, they call it Sex and Love Addicts Anonymous, Sex Anonymous, pornography, you name it, and the 12 steps can work for it. Rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. There are those who cannot or will not give themselves to the simple program. They seem to be constitutionally incapable of being honest. They seem to be blonde that way. It's born, but I think it's funny to say blonde. Some people just are constitutionally incapable of grasping this, and that's just the way it is. Most can. If you're thoroughly willing to follow that path, it'll work. It has worked. It will work. It does work. So, enough out of me. Harold, tell us about Harold.
Well, hello, everybody. It's nice to be here. Thank you, Joseph, for that introduction. And first, I'd like to say a couple of things about Joseph and the website, rumradio.org. I don't get tired of explaining that this is my way of giving back. This is Joseph's way of giving back. We've received so much from the 12-step groups. I've been a member of many of the groups. I had family members and friends who were addicted to various things and who drank too much, including my dad, bless his heart. He's gone to the great beyond now, but I didn't find out the full extent of his drinking until his funeral. Some of his old friends filled me in on some of the details, and it was shocking. So I'm here in order to give back, and the spirit of AA, which actually was going to be called the James Group because it comes from the Bible and the book of James a lot, but they called it Alcoholics Anonymous, and I owe my existence to the 12 steps and the traditions of Alcoholics Anonymous and all the people that showed up, that suited up and showed up and worked the steps in their lives, applied the principles, and helped the families. And years ago, 25 years ago when I started, there was a major emphasis on helping families. And that's part of why I became a family therapist. And the it's tragic for me to actually face the fact and admit the fact that there's very little reaching out to families that goes on anymore. I mean, it's really sad because that is the backbone. When this thing started in 1935, it was Bill Wilson talking to Dr. Bob Smith about, and Bill went over there in order to keep himself sober. Dr. Bob thought that Bill had shown up to try to keep him sober. And when Bill admitted, no, I'm not here to keep you sober, doctor, I'm here to keep myself sober, the whole thing took off like a rocket. That's really the concept that means the most to us. And so Joseph and I like to go back to basics and really see if we can recapture the spirit of AA by doing the things that they did, the things that worked, and the things that have helped millions and millions of people in all the years since 1935. And so we're here because these steps work if you work them. And the only way to work them is with someone else. I'm not shy about saying that. And I get on my soapbox and I talk about that every day in my work with couples. More than half of the couples I work with, there's some sort of addiction as the foundation of their problems. And it's primary. We've got to start with the addiction first and get the thinking clear before we can accomplish anything else. So that's what we're here to talk about today. And we're here to talk about families. We're here to talk about working with other people, and we're here to just help you understand that as you arrive in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, Narcotics Anonymous, Sex Addicts Anonymous, as you arrive in those rooms, you learn the steps. Hopefully you work with someone else, because it is preparation for you to take someone newer in the program. After you've been through the steps, you take someone else through the steps, and that's when you really start to get the program and get recovery. It's not really recovery until you begin working with someone that's newer and until you begin giving back. So let me also mention that Joseph does not receive any remuneration from this website or the radio program. As to the contrary, he spends thousands on this stuff. He's really invested a lot of money, and it is reaching, who knows how many. We're over 300,000 hits to the website, and over 200 countries, Joseph?
151 countries, including Mississippi.
That is amazing to me. Amazing. There's a big push in Mexico right now because they're really getting a lot of value from the idea of going back to basics and working with other people. So that's what this is about. So let's get rolling, Joseph. I'm really glad that the speaker didn't, our guest did not show up tonight, because folks, Joseph is quite a talented author. You'll enjoy reading the articles that he writes and the other authors that he includes on the website, rumradio.org. And so there are some articles that we really haven't talked much about and really deserve to be discussed. And so we also want you to participate. If you'd like to call in, Joseph will give the call-in number. And we also have a chat room. I've opened the chat room, Joseph, and so we're ready to interact with our listeners. Of course, if you're listening on the archive, that's wonderful, too. Of course, we can't interact. But if any of you are hearing this live, give us a buzz. Shall I give the number, Joseph?
Yeah, please, Harold.
All right. The call-in number, if you'd like to call in and listen on your phone, or even ask us a question or make a comment, where is it?
It's 949-534-0621. Again, 949-534-0621.
Very good. That's it.
I like to start the show. Thank you, Harold. It's always nice to hear that. A lot of people accuse me of making money out of other people's misery, and I've had people try to encourage me to, you know, put ads on or click and pay or donations or something, at least to cover some of the cost of this thing. And I said, you know, let me tell you, I'm accused without doing it. Could you imagine if I actually did something like that? No, thank you. The credit for this work goes to God, so we keep it clean.
Yes, the ground would open up and swallow you up if you did that.
I'm telling you, the people are looking for a problem, and, you know, they'll usually find it. I don't want to give them – I'm accused of it, and I said, no, there's no money being made, but they insist on accusing me of doing that, looking for something to argue about. You know, it's just information. No one's ever been raped by a book or made pregnant by a movie. It's just information. Okay, it's good information. I seek no fortune, and I seek no fame. What's the problem? So if somebody looks at it and they don't find a value to it, you can have contempt after investigation. Hey, it's not for me. But at least you've taken the opportunity to take a look. And I will tell you this, if you go to that website, you will find tools, techniques, understandings from sponsors all over the world. How cool is that? Understandings that are not usually available to the average Joe in AA or NA or CA. I mean, this is good stuff. There's nothing, no argument.
By sponsor, we don't mean someone that's paying money. What we, in the spirit of the 12 steps, a sponsor is like an accountability partner, someone who can actually lead you through the steps and someone with whom you can make 12-step calls. So that's what we mean by sponsor, folks. It's an accountability partner, not someone paying anybody.
Yeah, I had a fellow from Africa. When he saw the word sponsor, he kept coming back at me and said, well, I need somebody to sponsor me to do football. That's what they call soccer over there. He needed a sponsor. And I tried to explain to him. I said, no, that's not. Yeah, he says, you're in the wrong tent, kid. This isn't that kind of sponsor. This is about addiction recovery. Someone who takes you to help you go through the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, someone that's been through it before. As a matter of fact, the term sponsor was not originally used in AA. That kind of morphed into it. Originally, that came about when the hospitals were the hotbed of recovery, because that's where they found number three. Bill Duff was in the hospital, and Dr. Bob was involved with 5,000 alcoholics in the hospital at Akron Hospital. So the breeding ground for AA basically were the hospitals. So they just kept repeating the same modality, if you will, or the same behavior over and over again, and the prime area was the hospitals. You'd get to stay maybe 6 days and a detox. And you would go visit your prospect, and they use the word prospect, which is a sales term. And they would qualify that prospect. And the hospitals were the place. So you'd go to the hospital, you'd find somebody who was in going through detox, and you befriended him and tried to get him interested in a better way of life, that you were able to stay sober and you could relate to this person like no one else can, one drunk talking to another. And you might even have to pay for his stay. And then you took him to your home, gave him a place to live, and then after he did what they called the surrender, you got down on your knees before you left the hospital. Basically, you did the first three steps, acknowledging that you were powerless, that there was a power that could restore you, God, and that you were willing to let him do that. And then you went to the meeting with your sponsor where the other rest of the steps were done. So even when hospital care was no longer part of the experience, the word sponsor stuck as someone to mentor you through, teacher, friend, mentor, someone who's been through the steps, understands, has read the big book, basic text, has either had a spiritual awakening or is in the process of doing the same, and has a sponsor. The pamphlet in AA usually says someone who is engaged in working with someone else on an ongoing basis who has gained some recovery. That's the only word they use in the pamphlet, is some, on an ongoing basis, is qualified to be a sponsor. There's not a lot of information about sponsorship in AA, other than Chapter 7. The problem is Chapter 7 is directed back to the hospitals and back to the families, which is not really my experience anymore in AA. But, Harold, you don't see that anymore.
I used to see it, but not anymore. That's one of the sad changes that has occurred in AA. Not a lot of people going out into the community, going out, reaching out to the family. It's kind of sad. It was a very, very big part of my recovery experience, and now it's hard to find it.
Yeah, it's getting harder and harder. The experience now is that people are coming into the rooms. People know AA. You can go on the Yellow Pages, or you go into your phone directory, or however you do it on the internet now, and you find an AA group, you get the address and you go. because you think that they might have an answer. So the folks, most of them are coming through the doors. Now there's halfway houses, three-quarter houses, the rehabs that are always looking for sponsors. They're harder to come by at those places. Most people find their sponsees at the groups or at the clubs. They're walking through the doors. I'll tell you this. I can go to Skid Row, that I already know. And like Bob and Bill, there's the hospital. But now I hear tell they come in under their own steam, washed but not clean, and desperate for simple instruction. The next time this golden opportunity walks through the doors, I will push and shove and help them find their seat so my own recovery becomes complete. I believe it's on page 93 of the big book, it's 89. Go find a prospect and start working on them. Doesn't it say have this prospect find you? This is one of the turns, I believe, that's come from the rehabs, that the person walking through the door has no idea what the culture is, what the jargon is, none of it. He has no idea. All that person knows coming through the doors of AA is that he's in pain, he's got a problem, and he's either gotten, we call it a nudge from the judge because he's got a DWI powers that be tell them, okay, you're either going to go to jail or you're going to go to AA. So it's punishment now. Okay, all right, I'll go to AA. So they're coming through the doors, or they're desperate. They're coming in. They have no idea how this thing works. Some of them don't want to even be there. The nudge from the judge sometimes. And then we expect these people who have not a clue of what's going on to sit in a meeting, to share in that meeting. I don't know about why. And then at the end of the meeting, go find a sponsor, and he has no idea what a sponsor is, what a sponsor does or doesn't do. Makes no sense to me, but we keep telling him, keep coming back. Like, for some reason, you're going to get this thing through osmosis. If you sit in enough meetings and hearing all these people share, eventually the solution is going to come through the floor, up the legs of your chair, up your butt, and into your head. How do you like? You like that, Harold?
So let's begin with the third step prayer.
Okay.
By the way, your voice sounds quite clear tonight. I like the electronic quality.
Oh, good. It always helps. When I have a new sponsee, okay, so I find my sponsee and someone's just come in. He got his beginner's chip. We have a thing called a beginner's chip, and that's an outward sign of an inward commitment to try our way of life for 24 hours. Stay sober for 24 hours. See if you can do it. If you're interested enough, we'll give you the chip. It's a commit. You're making a little commitment, an outward sign of an inward commitment to try our way of life for 24 hours. You got the beginner's chip. So you were desperate enough, or you thought there might be a solution. You got your chip. So I grabbed the guy by the hand after we have a prayer at the end, which is a benediction. And we usually start the meetings with a prayer, which is called an invocation, inviting in the spirit. And when I grab him by the hand, and I after the prayer, I'll call the third step prayer, where you have some kind of chant at the end. And I ask him, have you had enough? Yes or no? If he's had enough, he'll know what I'm talking about. He might ask, what do you mean? Have you not had enough pain? Have you had enough humiliation? Have you had enough alcohol? Yes or no? Yes. Are you willing to go to any length to achieve sobriety? Yes or no? Yes. So not only telling me, he's repeating it to himself. He's making a commitment. And I carry around Clancy's seven questions when I'm looking for a sponsee, and I hand him this paper with seven little questions on it. I say, okay, I need you to answer these seven questions, and I need them back tomorrow. Here's my number. Expect your call. Now, the big book actually says to sit down and talk with this fellow. The best thing to do is have him talk. He doesn't really care what you know until he knows how much you care. So you're sitting down and you let them talk. Everybody does it a little different. There's a whole different modalities and techniques that go along with that. That's mine. But the big book says you're supposed to sit down and discuss you know, why he's there and what is his expectations, all of that. I cut to the chase, answer these seven questions, give me a call tomorrow. It works. Most of the fellows I work with, the ones that do call me, they hit the deck running, and we get into the steps right away. And one of the first assignments I tell them, you got to get a home group. In the home group, I want you to get some men's names, as many as you can, 10, 20, 30, as many as you can, with phone numbers, with their permission that you can call them. It's your lifeline. The home group is so you connect up with the fellowship. And every day I want you to call a different man every day for the next 30 days and get permission to recite the third step prayer. And I'm asking you to do this for several reasons. And one reason is I want you to pick up the 500-pound telephone and ask for help. Two, I want you to connect up with the fellowship. You get to know people's names. They're going to get to know your name. Third, the third step prayer encapsulates what we're going to try to accomplish by working all 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. And fourthly, the fellow he's calling might have been thinking about picking up his first drink, his first hit of crack, his first. And the chances are he will not, no guarantee, but it's already got your sponsee into service, which we find to be the greatest immunity from alcohol, service to others. And this is the third step prayer. God, I offer myself to thee, to build with me and do with me as thy will. Relieve me of the bondage of self, that I may better do thy will. Relieve me of the bondage of self, that I better do thy will. Take away my difficulties, that victory over them may bear witness to those I would help of thy power, thy love, and thy way of life. May I do thy will always. Can I get an amen on that?
Amen. Wonderful.
Well, yeah, the third step prayer really encapsulates a lot. It's also called the surrender prayer for the obvious reasons when you listen to it. So tonight, normally, you know, we would have had the interview, would have started. And I have a feeling, I believe this fellow's in California, and I think he probably didn't catch the central time, and he's just looking at the clock. So he'll call in a couple hours waiting to what happened to the show, the kind of deal. But who knows? Sometimes you have no control over life. That's life. I'd like to get into something on the website. This is the latest post. I didn't write it. I haven't written everything on the website, and I think it would be too much if I did, and I don't want to do that anyway. This lady had a very interesting concept. She didn't want to go to the 12 step. She didn't want to do 12 steps. So she wrote the story, and I entitled it 12 Steps, A Thought Made Me Wretch Until I Bled to Death. You see some zombies on the front page. Yeah. I said, I'm a recovering addict, and I hated 12 step. Somehow, I managed to avoid NA for 15 years of meth addiction. With the exception of a short time when I was 19, I ended up putting myself in a psych ward 6 months before I turned 20 for hurting myself. I was really on the edge of no return. While I was there, I was honest about my drug history, even though I wasn't using at the time, which landed me in chemical dependency classes and their version of a 12-step program. I will just say that I was not a happy camper about all of this. Have you heard that story before, Harold?
Oh, yeah, a million times.
There seems to be something about being in a 12-step program, not in the rooms with other alcoholics or something. I think it's a cloistered environment. I believe the demand builds up. You know, you're behind walls. You don't have access to the world. So you might be sober, you might be clean for that time you're behind the walls, but when you leave those walls, the world is still there.
You mean going to rehab?
Yeah.
Yeah,
is that or no?
It is insulated, yeah.
And the world isn't like that. You're not insulated in the world. It's just there. There's alcohol in every corner, practically. So trying to stay away from temptation, I believe, just builds up a demand. Gee, okay, I've been sober 30 days now. I think I'll celebrate. I can do this. At this place, all of the people who needed meetings went to the same one. Gamblers, addicts, alcoholics, and anyone who needed 12-step, all in the same place. It's funny, my church does it that way too. I'm telling them, that's not the way to go, but that's how they do it. I didn't feel I could relate. I was young and closed-minded, and especially since I was seriously angry and resistant to being there in the first place. I wasn't an effective means of therapy for me at all. My excuses were that I didn't drink to begin with, had never gambled, didn't have a food addiction, and wasn't using drugs anyway, so why was I there? Not to mention, I was still a teenager, and everyone else in the meeting was at least 10 years my senior.
That's really tough.
Yeah, you know, and I noticed that they're coming in younger into AA now. Started maybe 10 years ago. Most alcoholics come in, my experience is middle age.
Yeah, I was 40.
Yeah, I was 50, which is fairly common at that point, because alcohol is a slow blow, pardon the pun. What's bringing the kids in now, the younger folks now, are the drugs. The meth, cocaine, ecstasy, the designer drugs, bath salts, the list goes on and on and on. These are very heinous, and the impact is exponential. So alcohol takes time because it's a social elixir. Lubricant and takes time for most. Now, some alcoholics go down quick, but most of the time it takes time. My experience. Yours, Harold, is that yours?
Well, yeah. Yeah, I was messed up from age 20 to age 40, and I'm 65 now. I've every day of my recovery is a gift from God. Every single day.
Yes, and that's after working the steps, and it's a process, there's no doubt about it. Well, I didn't stay clean long. Okay, after a month in the hospital, I was released, and I walked away from 12-step, intending never to return. I really believed that I hated 12-step. I had the impression it was just a place where people gathered to tell war stories, justify their problems, and glorify their addictions. I mean, that was my experience with it so far. And because I was so resistant and judgmental, I never considered that maybe this wasn't the reality of 12-step. Maybe this wasn't the way things were supposed to be. And anyways, I didn't need to go to meetings. I wasn't using, so what's the point? Well, I didn't stay clean for long, and when I did relapse, actually it's not a relapse. She says it's a relapse. That's not a relapse. That's a slip. I didn't quit again for a very long time, in fact. I didn't get clean for good until I was 30. I don't know if you know that. Have you ever heard this? I just recently heard this. If you have not worked the 12 steps, that's called a slip. Once you've worked the 12 steps, it's called a relapse.
Yeah,
have you ever heard
sense.
That before? Yeah, it does. And when I heard it, I said, oh, yeah. So that's the difference between a slip and a relapse. Believe it or not, I have been successful in my recovery without utilizing the 12-step fellowships. I chose a different type of program that didn't require 12-step meetings at all. I've been clean for almost 4 years, and until the past month, in that entire 3 years and 10 months, I only attended one NA meeting. I only went to that one meeting because a friend of mine convinced me to go with him. He was on a mission to prove to me that not all meetings are bad. And he was so right. I had a great time at the meeting. He took me to, and you know, I didn't live an hour away. I would go with him again. It was powerful enough to change my mind. It was really humbling. It really was. And I have, a mind is like a parachute. It works best when open. Since I lived so far from that meeting and my own program, I eventually decided to reach out to the local recovery community in my area via Facebook, and was delighted to receive a private message from a woman I know and admire, inviting me to her favorite meeting in our town. I went to my first local meeting a month ago and haven't missed one since. It's a great meeting full of honesty and real support. Nothing like the first meeting I attended so many years ago. I have found sisterhood and compassion there with all the stuff that was such a huge turnoff with the first meeting I went to and really hated. Honestly, I still really know nothing of significance about the fellowships except that they make enormous difference in so many people's lives, and that is enough for me to respect that the program is of amazing value to people and society in general. I have learned from what I know about the 12-step program compared to my own recovery program that there are many parallels and similarities. But I am learning more. I purchased a copy of the 12 steps and the 12 traditions, and I'm reading it. And since I already own the big book and the NA book, I will read those as well. I didn't think 12-step was for me. I really believed it was a bunch of crap. But you know, I was wrong. It has already changed my life so much that in a month I've been attending, I have so much gratitude for the woman there and for myself for opening my mind enough to give it another chance. Jamie Lee B. is a full-time mother, recovering meth addict, and the blogger. Harold?
Gee, that's really heartwarming to hear. It's so great that she gave it one more chance, and that someone had the solid recovery skills to write her a note, talk about her experience, strength, and hope, invite her to a meeting. And without that invitation, this lady, it sounds like she wouldn't have attended another 12-step meeting. And so the woman who invited her really worked according to the guidelines in the world of recovery, which is don't say too much too soon, save that for later, and just invite someone to a meeting, take them to a meeting, meet them at the meeting, give this thing a chance. That's just a great story. There's so many times it happens that way. I know it's happened to me, and I've invited people and who were quite against it. Contempt prior to investigation.
Oh, I love that one. We have a caller. I'm going to take the call, Harold.
Wonderful.
Hi, Joe.
Yeah, hi, caller.
This is Mike Givens. How are you?
Oh, hi,
oh,
Mike. I thought we lost you.
Yeah, you know, for some reason, I'm thinking the show is on at 9 o'clock, so I'm preparing for a 9 o'clock show, and I just got a text message that the show is on now.
Yeah, well, it's 9:38 Central Time.
Oh, okay. I thought it was Pacific Time. My humblest apologies to you.
We're in Houston. Yes.
It's all right, Michael. That's what I told Harold. I says, I'm telling you, he didn't catch it with Central Time.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, I posted everything at 9 o'clock Pacific time. But I'm glad I just got a call from one of my friends telling me that a text message from one of my friends telling me that the show's on now.
Okay, good. Well, we just filled in the gap with one of the stories on Rum Radio about a lady. And so now this is our guest made it.
Right.
You know, sometimes you just, that's showbiz. You know, the show must go on. But I'm glad you made
right.
it. You know.
Well, I'm sorry.
I missed
the show
right.
Previously. That sounded interesting.
As a matter of fact,
I started not to say anything. I was just interested in what you were saying.
See, you're a wise man. It's the privilege of knowledge to speak, and the priority of wisdom to listen.
Right. Okay. You have to know when to listen and when to speak. That's right.
You know, that's hard for me. I have so many words and so few thoughts.
Right. Okay.
I'm with my co-host, Harold. This is Michael Givens.
Nice to meet you.
Hello.
Michael. Well, I'm looking forward to hearing some ideas from you.
Oh, pleasure's all mine. I'm happy to be here, and it's a privilege to be on your show, Joseph.
Oh, thank you, and thank you for showing. I was excited about you coming on. We have some time. We can go over a little bit. I usually schedule a little longer just in case, so I'm not pressed up against it. We go out live on Saturday nights on WNAH, so that's an hour. But that's okay. You know, that's most of the people who come on the show, listen to the show. We've had as many as 1,700 for the week go to archives. They listen through the archives on MP3. And
right.
So... yeah, so somebody will call, they won't. Usually they listen on the archive. Okay, so Michael Givens. So Michael is an author. He's written several books. Usually the way we do that is what it was like, what happened, and what it was like now, and your passion. So Michael, tell us, what was it like?
Well, it was very interesting. First of all, just so your listeners know a little bit about me, I was a police officer in Oakland for a number of years, nearly 10 years. I was a police officer in the city of Oakland, California. And, you know, things were groovy, everything was going fine and everything, and just going out fighting crime every day like a superhero. And I quit the police department. After 9.5 years to run my business, I owned a traffic school. I taught traffic safety for quite a few years. And I started my own school, and I was doing both at the same time. And one day my lieutenant pulled me in office and says, well, Mike, he said, you can't own the traffic school and be a police officer at the same time because it's a conflict of interest. So I guess they thought I was going to quit put the traffic school out of business, but I decided to get out of police work because it was never in my heart to be a police officer, you know, for the rest of my life or until I retire or whatever. So I gave up the police officer job. I ran my school. And during the time I was running the school, I made a terrible mistake. I decided that I wanted to be a drug addict. So I,
was that
real bad
decision? Was that like, should I become a painter? Should I be a sculptor? Oh, no, I know, a drug addict.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, I had the option. I could have gone back to the police department and did some things. But what happened, I moved back to New Orleans. I'm originally from New Orleans, Louisiana. And I decided to move back to New Orleans and help a friend of mine run his security company. He had put up a big contract, come up, or whatever, and he wanted me to help him run his business. And while I was there, I met someone that introduced me to the world of crack cocaine.
Hmm.
That was my That was my drug of choice. Actually, the drug chose me. I didn't choose it at all. Anyway, I decided to be a crack addict, and I went through a bunch of money, and, you know, the insanity that we addicts go through when we're lost, you know, just lost out in the wilderness, being lost. So I eventually gave up the job, or I was asked to leave the job, you know, because of my addiction, and it was just a spiral, long story short. It was just a spiral downward, you know, from that point. I lost my job, I lost my house, and gave up my cars, and so before long, a few years later, I'm a homeless drug addict under a freeway pushing a buggy. Even before I got to the point where I was pushing the buggy, I was in and out of jail, which was quite an embarrassment. Being an ex-police officer was quite an embarrassment because I remember my first arrest, the arresting officer for my shoplifting charge was my ex-partner.
Oh, no.
Right. I'm handcuffed in the back of a store, and my ex-partner walks in, the guy I used to ride in a police car with and fight crime together.
How humiliating.
Yeah, it was. It was quite, it was one of the low points of my addiction, and there were many. I don't think there were any high points, as a matter of fact. It was all low. And the way addiction works, it actually makes you think you're having fun. I thought I was having fun. I thought that this is what I wanted. You know, I wanted to be out on the street, throwing my life away, using drugs, throwing away all my money. I thought that was the thing to do. I thought I was really enjoying myself.
That
but
is,
of course, I was wrong.
Ahmed, I'm so glad that you said that. It fits with so many of the people I know, and it fits with my experience also. We really think we're having fun. This is a lie.
It is. It is. And it's a lie told by the drug to the drug users. In this case, it was me.
Yes.
You know? So I went through that whole insanity and in and out of jail. And then the judge told me that, hey, look, if you come to my court one more time on these simple misdemeanors, we're going to send you away to San Quentin. We're going to send you away for a long time, you know. So that was the end of my thievery career after a few arrests and a few stays in the county in a local jail. Didn't want to go to prison. So, but I still needed to feed this addiction because the addiction doesn't go away. The addiction's still there. It's still in me, right? And I had to work that out. So the way I worked it out, I said, okay, well, I see people around me getting bottles and cans, so I'll get some bottles and cans too. So I started pushing a buggy, you know, and that was the way I fed my addiction, you know, staying in hotels when I can afford it, afford the hotel room and my drugs. And the thing about it, I have high blood pressure. And another lie that addiction tells you is, you don't need to take that high blood pressure medication. You don't need that. What you need is some more cocaine.
I bought
into it 100%.
Did you ever switch to alcohol?
No, you know, alcohol was never a thing to me. It was never. You know, I didn't like the way alcohol tasted. I didn't like the way it made me feel. It made me down and out. And I've always been an up kind of person, and you know, I got drunk once, and it's like, oh no, this is not for me. This is not for me. You know, I needed something to jack me up and get me going. So I never really went the alcohol way, right? But addiction is addiction. It doesn't matter what the drug is, or whatever the addiction is. It could be gambling. It could be drugs, alcohol. It's all the same. It's an addiction. It's an insanity that corrupts your mind and makes you do things you would normally do regardless of the consequences. So that's pretty much my story. But one day I was walking down the street pushing a buggy, and like I said, I hadn't taken my high blood pressure medication. and doing drugs all day and all night when I can afford it. So one day I was walking down the street, and my heart stopped because what happened, I had doctors later told me I had hematomas all over my heart because my heart was overworked.
Wow.
And, so my heart stopped, and I don't know what happened. I guess somebody called 911. I'm still grateful to that person, whoever it was, that called 911, and I was transported for emergency surgery. And I actually woke up about 3.5 months later because they induced a coma because I was in a great deal of pain. And I was told later what had happened was they opened my chest and they used whatever method they used to remove the hematomas from around my heart so my heart can pump properly again. But I was in a coma for 3.5 months. I woke up. I didn't know what was going on. I just had the scar on my chest from the operation. And that was a turning point for me. That's what I decided. I made a conscious decision that I no longer wanted to throw my life away. I no longer wanted to waste my life on incomprehensible insanity that I was under the influence. So I turned my life around and decided to write my first book while I was in the intensive care ward at Summit Hospital.
Interesting.
And,
Interesting.
Yeah. So that's where I wrote my first book, and I was so weak. I was in the hospital another 4 months after the 3.5 month coma, but when I left the hospital, I was still very weak. I couldn't stand. I couldn't even sit up for more than 15, 20 minutes. But the 15 to 20 minutes every hour that I can sit, I was at my computer writing my first book, The Dopeless Hope Feed, because I made a promise to God when I was in intensive care that I said, look, you just get me out of this insanity that I've been under. I'll do anything. I mean, came to me was that my purpose was to help other addicts recover. And that's the purpose. I wrote The Dopeless Hope Fiend. It's an inspirational story of me. It's a story. It's my story, what happened to me, what it was like, what it's like now, and what happened. So I wrote The Dopeless Hope Fiend so other people can read it and get something out of it and decide maybe even one person decide they wanted to change their life. And so that's what the book is about. It's not a glorification of the lifestyle that I was that I participated in for so many years. It's my story geared toward this is how it was for me, and this is what you can do if you ever hope to recover from the insanity.
I love the play on words. See, that tells me right away that you're a writer. Writers like to play with words. You're a wordsmith, the Dopeless Hope Fiend.
I typed that into the internet, and here it is on Amazon and Goodreads. And it's a wonderful cover, too. The front cover looks quite interesting with that skull.
Mm-hmm.
Continue, Michael.
Yeah, the skull, if you look at it carefully, in the head of the skull, you have a hypodermic needle and you have drugs and you have marijuana. That there's a picture of it inside the skull, and that's what goes on and out. Right? You know,
that's wonderful.
So it took me, you know, at first I'd sit at the computer for 15 minutes and then I couldn't sit up anymore. I lay down for an hour and then get up another 15 minutes. Gradually, my strength came back. And the fortunate thing for me is that, I really feel grateful that there was no permanent damage done to my heart or my body. Once they removed the hematomas from my heart, I was just pretty much normal. I can do anything anybody else can do, and there was no permanent. And so I really consider myself lucky or blessed because I know there are many people that I know who succumb to our disease who are no longer with us. And they're people that are in prison for many, many years because of their addiction or physical abnormalities and can't do things. So I feel very fortunate and thankful.
Let
and
me
grateful.
Ask you this, Michael. Now, okay, so you're writing the book now. Have you gone to any of the fellowships? Have you worked the steps? Have you read any of the basic literature? Have you done any of that 12-step work?
Yeah, and the first thing I did when I got out of hospital is I got a sponsor, and I started work steps, and I belong to two fellowships because I enjoy AA meetings. I go to AA even though alcohol was never my drug of choice, and also the Fellowship of Narcotics Anonymous, and I do some speaking, and. But my pride lies in the speaking I do to youth to get them away from meetings, not get them away from meetings, but away from meetings. I speak to youth so they might stay away from the lifestyle maybe, and not even get involved in the first place.
Let me ask you this. Okay, so mm-hmm. you found your sponsor, right, and then you started working the steps. Now,
right.
When it comes now, I don't know Harold's point of view about this, is that I believe that Bill Wilson wrote Singleness of Purpose, which means that the alcoholic is with the alcoholic. I believe that it was misconceived idea. Today, most of the folks are coming in because of drugs, even more so than alcohol, especially the kids.
Right.
And diverting us from addiction is an addiction is an addiction. At one time, alcohol was an illegal drug, so the law changed.
Right, right.
So, to me, it's still it's the same addiction. This whole snobbery about drug addicts and alcoholics, I think it's a farce, and I think it takes away from the ability to coalesce our recovery. We have a caller. Let me take the caller, see if he's got a question.
Mm-hmm.
Hello, caller. Do you have a... This is Joseph. Who's this? You there? 618-499. Can you hear us?
Yes, I can hear you.
Okay, and who is this?
My name is Susan.
Hi, Susan. Did you have a question for Michael?
No, not right now. I'm just kind of listening. I may soon, though.
Okay.
Hi, Susan.
Hey, Mike.
How you doing?
I'm doing well. Clean,
yeah,
sober, and happy.
Yeah, that's good. I'm glad you're with us. Susan's a good friend of mine. She's I started a group called if I'm allowed to break her anonymity in our group. She's in
go
our
for
group.
It.
There's okay. We have a group on Facebook called Hope Fiends. So like my book, The Dopeless Hope Fiend. You know, you mentioned the name of the book. I said, people ask me sometimes, I want to get your book, The Hopeless Dope Fiend. I said, no, please. The Dopeless Hope Fiend is a little different. But you know, and people see me, hey, you're that hopeless dope fiend dude. And I said, no.
I'm afraid a title like that's going to stick. You know, that's just like,
right,
people don't want
to
think that hard. They don't. They just don't want to think that hard. Okay, so you got your sponsor, and you started working the steps. How long did it take you to get through the steps? Did you have 1, 2, or 3 right away, or how long did it take you to get through all steps? And tell me about how the steps came out and how it worked out.
Well, you know, you go through the steps, but you never go through the steps. You know what I mean? To me, step work is a lifetime event. So how long did it take me to successfully work the steps? I don't know yet because I'll never finish working them. You know, it's an everyday thing to me. But going back to what you said about AA and NA, and, you know, because like I said, I enjoy AA meetings. And there's one meeting that I used to go to that I don't go to anymore. They said, well, no, don't talk about drugs in our meeting. This is an AA meeting. You
right.
know, we don't talk about drugs. We talk about alcohol. But it's just, all of it's the same. I don't. If, whether
yes.
or not you're an alcoholic, you're addicted to methyl alcohol, which is the drug that's in alcohol. So you're a drug addict. So I mean, it's addiction is addiction. But even when it when it doesn't even come down to drugs, you're talking about gambling. Gambling is an addiction. Addiction is a brain thing. The drug, to me, and it's my opinion, but I've heard it repeated by other people, we're not addicted to the drug. We're addicted to, it's a disease. It's a disease like, addiction is a disease like any other disease. It's only manifested, cocaine to me is a symptom of my disease. I was an addict even before I took the first hit of cocaine. Alcoholics
Amen.
Are addicted to, they're addicts before they even take the first drink, because something brought me to the point in my life that I took that first hit of cocaine. You know, regular people don't respond to cocaine the way I do. Some people will do it once and say, no, that's not for me, I won't do it again. They're not addicts. I'm an addict. And whether I use cocaine to manifest my addiction or whether or not I use alcohol to manifest my addiction, it's all the same because we're addicts.
The only Amen. Reason I like cocaine is because I like the smell.
Oh, yeah, you're so addicted to the smell that I'm willing to give up everything I've ever worked for in my entire life to get that smell?
That's right.
No, I don't think that's. I don't think that's the point. Funny, though.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so then, okay, you went through the spot. How did you pick your sponsor? Did he pick you? Did you pick him? And how did you do that?
Well, you know, before my surgery, I was kind of in and out of the program. And there's a fellowship in Oakland here that I went to, and I knew the guy. And the guy would always be there to support me whenever I decided to come back into the rooms. And it's somebody I knew, somebody I was close to at the time. So I just asked this person, I said, look, you've been my sponsor all the while, so would you like to be my sponsor? You know, he would see me. When I was in my addiction, pushing that buggy down the street, he would drive by, he would talk to me and he'd say, look, when you're ready to come back, you know, do you know where we are, or you know where I am, and that sort of thing. And every time I walked back through the door, he was always there to greet me. So, as a matter of fact, I wrote about him in the book. He's passed away now. He's dead. And but he's in the Dopeless Hope Fiend, it explained. So
die sober.
I'm sorry.
Did he die sober?
Yeah. Yes, he did. Yes, he did. And he was one of the greatest people I've ever met in my life.
Well, he probably helped save your life. That's why. That's what sponsors do. You know, as a sponsor, we don't take credit for your recovery, mm-hmm. and we don't take responsibility for your relapse. You know, I believe a sponsor's main job is really to get you into conscious contact with God.
Mm-hmm.
Through working the 12 steps. But that's the goal.
Right.
It's not
mm-hmm.
about the sponsor or to me, the 12 steps are the repentance process for children.
Mm-hmm.
And how to get you to a conscious contact with your Creator through service work. We found that service work is the immunity to this disease. Intensive work with another alcoholic will work when other activities fail. And I believe
right.
that's really the essence of the program. So he's worked good. You've got the steps down. Have you sponsored anybody?
The short answer, no. No, I haven't sponsored anybody. But I, like I said, my main focus is on kids. I speak at many youth centers and boys clubs and things like that, whenever I'm invited. I consider it an honor to be invited. But believe it or not, I haven't been asked to be a sponsor. If someone would ask me, I'd be glad to sponsor a person. But these years, I haven't been asked to be a sponsor. So, no, right now I don't sponsor anybody.
That's one of the arguments I have the way the program works now is that at the end of the meeting, they'll say, anybody who's available to be a sponsor, please raise your hand. I think that's probably common all over the place. But the
right,
big book,
right.
It says, find the prospect and start working on them.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't say have someone who has no idea of how this thing works go find a spot. And, you know, the guy's shy coming in anyway. They're shy coming in.
Right,
they don't know what
right.
to expect. You know, and, like, mm-hmm. we expect them to sit there and ruminate long enough to figure it out without dying. So then
right.
now they could go get a sponsor and have no idea what a sponsor does or doesn't do. I think
right.
it's ludicrous. I think it's counterproductive. The numbers show that. Back
mm-hmm.
to basics is the key to me. I think that if we went back to a back to basics, well, you went out and you got your sponsee and you start working with them. You know the program. You've worked the steps. You got a sponsor. You've read all the basic texts and you've had a spiritual awakening or in the process
right.
of getting a spiritual awakening and you're available for telephone calls and meetings. Let's get started. But that's
right.
Right. That's my
soapbox. I agree. And maybe to me, I haven't been aggressive enough to look for sponsees, but I think my calling is more toward the kids, and that's what I really focus on. That's what I really focus and concentrate my time on is dealing with the teenagers and young adults that we can't afford to lose, you know. I think the best situation against having somebody look for a sponsor is removing the necessity to have a sponsor in the first place by just getting these kids not to even take the first hit or drink or joint or whatever the situation is. And that's what I focused on mostly.
Okay. To me, I believe sponsorship is the key. You know, that's the how this thing all started. A lot of folks don't like to sponsor. I know when I sponsor fellas, they'll balk. I'll say, okay, after step five, you're available to be a sponsor. Now, most program members will not agree with that. Step five in the 12 and 12 says, until we've spoken with complete candor to someone and they've done the same with us, we still
right.
didn't belong. Step five was the answer. It was the beginning of a true kinship between God and man. So now, not only are we supposed to speak a fifth step, we're supposed to hear a fifth step. Who hears a fifth step?
Right.
A sponsor.
Right.
And until you've done that, you really didn't belong, and you were just circling the field waiting to run out of spiritual gasoline. What's your take on
right.
that?
Well, you know, I respect that point of view. But variety is the spice of life. You know, it takes all kinds to make a world. And we were, you know, to me, we were born with different brains, so we can use our brains differently. And some people do things differently. And I think if everybody did everything the one way in the same way, then we wouldn't have any variety in life. So I admire that you do things that way. But I may see things a little differently, and again, I think my calling is to go a different path than what you suggest, because I just do things differently.
Well, you know,
and there are many, many organizations that really focus a lot on prevention. It's a very important part of the recovery world. I really appreciate that.
Right, and another thing is, I mean, that people recover in different ways. There's more than one way to recover from addiction. There's the 12 steps, and there are many other philosophies that people lead happy lives, never working the steps and doing things differently their own way. I mean, I know several people that recovered from alcohol and drugs and never worked the steps. To me, step work is a way of living. It's a way of living your life. But if a person just merely, I just want to go back to my own life and I just don't want to use alcohol and drugs, and I don't want to work the steps. If that's their way of seeing their recovery, who am I to argue? I mean, go ahead and do it your way, whatever works. What works for me may not work for you. So I try not to press people on the way they choose to recover. So that's just my philosophy on things.
I know. I'm kind of like, you remember Cheech and Chong? Remember that scene?
Yeah, I remember. We're showing our age now. Hey, go ahead.
Sign the paper, old man. Sign the paper. That's sort of like a Nazi sponsor. You better do certain things when I tell you. No, I just give them suggestions, which is a subtle command. And I just make suggestions. I don't give advice. I advise people never to give advice.
Right. It's a free
and
advice.
And I try to get them
sponsored. For it,
You know, I make suggestions to my sponsees. A lot of them, after step five, they usually say, no, I have to work all 12 steps before I sponsor. So they've made a commitment now to do that. And some don't want to do that even after the fact. But I put a full court press on them trying to get them to do that. And I really believe doing that for most people, maybe not for you, but it's insurance against the next drink or the next hit. Because when you're, you really don't learn the steps until you teach the steps. That's my take on it. But you're teaching the steps. You're writing the books. You're helping kids. I believe when we're in the service of our fellow beings, are we not in the service of our God? And when we're in that service and in that moment, is that not when we make a conscious contact with our Creator, who lives from moment to moment, eternity to eternity, life everlasting? The magic words in AA is action and more action. For faith without words is dead. So the key is, it really doesn't matter what you're doing as long as you're doing something.
Right.
You know,
I take it literally when we say we keep what we have by giving it away. You know, I take that literally. And I've implemented that in my life, that if I'm not giving, that I'm taking. There's no middle ground. So in order to remain sober, I have to give it back.
Yeah.
I have to give it back. You know, it's not even my choice. It's a deal I made with God when I was laying on my deathbed. You know, it's in order for me to keep what I have, I have to give it away. You know, to me, if I don't do that, to me it's death. So that's why I work so hard at doing what I do, the way that I do it, because I don't have a choice. There's no choice in the matter to me. There's no going back, because going back is death to me.
That's also my experience, too. That's great.
You know, the big book says our sobriety is contingent upon the maintenance of a daily spiritual condition. But see, I'll ask you this. What of itself maintains itself? Nothing I've ever found. You're either growing spiritually or you're declining spiritually. And if you're declining spiritually, if you're declining spiritually, your recovery and then even your sobriety becomes tentative.
Right. I agree. Like I said, there's no standing still. You can't stand still with this thing. Either you're going forward, are you going backwards? And it's not just recovery; it's just in life in general, you know.
Yeah.
Because if you're standing still, you're getting left behind. If you're standing still, people are going to bypass you. A number of corporations found that out, even with computers. Not AT&T, but
Verizon.
No. This is a company that made printers a long time ago. It'll come to me in a second. But, you know, if you stand still, other companies are going to pass you by. Apple came along and just went right by them, you know, because they kept developing. Apple kept developing new products. If you don't develop a new product in our brains, in our minds, other people will develop these products and just pass you by. So if you're standing still, you're being left behind. So you either go forward or you go backwards with this thing. You can't stand still with it. You can't just say, okay, I don't use anymore, I don't drink anymore, everything's great. You know, I could just stay right where I am and everything's going to be fine. No, before you know it, you'll be drinking again, you'll be using again. You know, either you go forward or backwards with this thing. You can't stand still. I don't think God wants us to stand still.
No.
So.
No, it's the growth is the key. We're supposed to continue growing. You know, it's
right.
And I believe that you can't grow spiritually and be comfortable at the same time. That pain is the touchstone.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the pain is the touchstone of all spiritual growth.
Yeah, you know, actually, I never thought of it like that, but you're pretty deep, Joseph. I like that.
Well, thank you. I study. The Lord's been real gracious to me. He gives me stuff way over my pay grade.
You're the host with the most, so yeah, you're a good guy.
I'm telling you, I'll read some of the stuff I had written previously, and I go back and read it, and I go, "Who wrote that?" Surely it wasn't me. I mean, this is really good stuff. So now you help the children. You go to the. I know we have Icky Paw, which is young people's in Alcoholics Anonymous. I don't really agree with that whole separation of children and boys and girls, that kind of deal. And I think it's really good for them personally to be around the older mentor, the person who's gone through all this, and then for them to stick together in these gaggles, I think is deleterious in the long run. But what do you think about that?
Well, you know, I are you referring to like kids coming to meetings and that sort of thing?
Well, it's their own meetings. You know, it's called Icky Paw, Young People in Recovery.
Oh yeah, I haven't heard of that one. I don't think.
That's all over the place. They've had their own conventions and things, and it's like we're pandering to the young person in recovery. You know, they had their own language. Some kid was telling me just the other day, and at my age, everybody's a kid practically. He said he went to an Icky Paw convention. He said he saw the largest pile of Red Bulls. He says you can't imagine how high that Red Bull. And you know, you're not drinking and drugging, man. But they see that Red Bull. That Red Bull's coming down.
You're talking to an ex-bottle with can man, so I'm looking at that. I'm seeing money. But I think it's important that that kids of alcoholics and addicts get together and discuss these things because they have, first of all, they have that in common. They have that in common. You know, mom and dad was an alcoholic, an addict, and they can relate and they can work some of those things out. Because when we go through stuff, the kids are going through even more. You know, because they're growing up seeing mom and dad not caring for me. There's no the PG&E. I'm in California. The power's not on, and we don't have any lights, and there's no food in the house. And you went through that too. You know, they can relate to that, and they could get together and work out their own thing. So I think it's a wonderful thing. I haven't heard of that particular organization here in California. Maybe it's not as popular as in other parts of the country, but I think it's a good thing for kids to get together and work out their problems because, see, they're recovering too. They're in recovery too. It's not just us. You know, they have to go through, they're going through the same thing, if not more, than the parents are going through in that situation. So, yeah, I think it's a good thing.
Okay, good. Well, I'm talking out of ignorance, basically, so I could be wrong. You know, you know, maybe it's a great organization. Maybe the numbers are really good, and I don't know that to be case. But I really think that sometimes having the older mentor there, people that have had life experiences, are really a benefit. But, you know, the culture, the American culture has always been youth-oriented, and that, you know,
right.
once you've gotten old, you're considered, hey, when are you going to, isn't it time for you to leave? Leave me some money so I can go get a nice car. You've left your, you know, like, you have nothing else to say. All right, we got a call.
Right.
I got another caller. Let's see
okay.
who's that. Caller, you're on. Who is this? Oh, 904, you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, who is this?
This is Susan still.
Hey,
oh,
Susan.
Oh. You called in another number. Did you have something you wanted to say or?
No, I didn't touch anything. But I will speak. I, you know, talking about the young kids, you know, I think what is important is, you know, whatever it takes to keep these kids clean and sober is what's important. And it, you know, a group of young people getting together, calling themselves whatever they want to call themselves, as long as they're working together for the benefit of all and to maintain sobriety, it's a wonderful thing. On the other hand, I do think experiences from us older folk is also very important for them to hear. So a combination of attending both types of meetings is probably a great benefit.
Yeah, Susan's
okay,
one of my smart friends.
Oh, she sounds like a smart friend.
I don't know. I struggle
right.
with this program at times. You know I do.
Yeah, I know, Susan. I know.
Thank you, Susan.
Anyway,
so
thank you for calling
you
in, Susan. I appreciate it.
Mm-hmm. Now, you've written another book, too, right, Michael? You've got another one going, or you have?
Yeah. You know, then my second book was released last year. The name of it is Words, and it's on Facebook. I have a Words page full of inspirational pictures and things that I've written. There are two admins on my Words page, Karen Simmons, and Darlene McPherson, they also post up there. But Words is my second book. It's inspirational short stories and poetry that I've written over the years that I've combined into this one book. It's a very interesting book, I hear. And it's also available on Amazon and Barnes & Noble and a number of different online retailers.
Okay, give
yeah,
me the
great.
Name again. So if I wanted to get this book, I could go at Kindle. It's Kindle and Hard and Soft Pack. Is that it?
Yeah, it's available in Kindle and on Soft Pack. The name of the book is Words, WRDS. And there are lots of words in the book, so I'm very pleased about that.
We have a lot of words in there, yeah. And so it's poetry
yeah,
and short stories.
Yeah, poetry and short stories, and there are many, many words in the book, so it's getting some good reviews. The Dopeless Hope Fiend has been out for 2 or 3 years now. I forget how long. But it's also on Amazon, and The Dopeless Hope Fiend is rated 5 stars out of 5 on Amazon, which is I'm proud to say that it's doing well. It's doing well.
Oh, I'm glad to hear that. So I take it there's a spiritual lilt to it as well?
To The Dopeless Hope? Well, both books, yeah. Yeah. God is mentioned throughout both books because I'm a very spiritual person. And by God's grace, I'm able to be on this phone right now and conduct this interview because I wouldn't be here if it wasn't for God. I wouldn't be here if it wasn't for a number of people praying for me when I was in the hospital. My church and a number of other people were praying all the while I was in the hospital. So I'm a big believer in prayer and meditation and God. So I just thank Him for my ability to do some of the things I do for other people right now. So it's not me, it's him. I don't get any of the credit.
God gets all the credit. That's it. All glory to God. That's, I agree with that for sure. Harold, do you have any last words?
Well, it's been very interesting, and I just encourage everyone to go on and check out Michael's books, and they're easy to find. Just type in Dopeless Hope Fiend, and you've got a number of listings and Tumblr and Amazon, and so it's been interesting. Keep up the good work with prevention. Young people really, a lot of young people can see things that have happened and they go the other direction. It's so much easier to prevent it than it is to clean up the mess after it's occurred, if people live through the mess. So I'm in agreement with you, Michael. I'm lucky to be alive. It's only because of God, and so now it's time to try to serve God, bring him glory. So thanks for being on, Michael. I've appreciated it.
Absolutely. And thank you very much for having me again. I'm sorry about the misunderstanding and the time, and I would tell any of your listeners to get me on Facebook. I'm there on Facebook, and Hope Fiends. We're always looking for some people with experience, strength, and hope in my group, and it's the greatest group on Facebook, I always say.
And
I
would
love
you
people that
spell your name, Mike?
Givens. G as in George, I-V-E-N-S. G-I-V-E-N-S. Michael Charles. On Facebook, I'm under author Michael Charles Givens, and the books are The Dopeless Hope Fiend and Words. Thank you very much.
That helps a lot.
Right. Okay.
Thank you, Michael. Any of the callers, would you like to say something before we close?
Yes, I would.
Please.
Hi, I'm Karen. I am a member of the Hope Fiend group, and I just wanted to say that if it was not for Michael forming this group after I had 7 years clean and relapsed, I doubt I would be celebrating 2 years clean again next Saturday. So,
bravo.
All right, Karen.
I am very, very grateful. Michael has been a wonderful friend. He reaches out to so many people, and he truly does give away everything in him. And thank you, Michael. That's it.
Thank you, Karen. Thank you for calling in. I appreciate it.
Okay. Y'all have a blessed night.
All right.
Thank you, Karen.
Well,
thank you, Michael, for coming on. I think we covered all we needed to cover. We went over a little bit, but that's okay. We're good. We're good to go. So I'll close. Thanks again. It was a great story.
All right. Thanks a lot, Joseph. Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. In closing, I'd like to say rumradio.org. We're in 151 foreign countries, including Mississippi. We're over 2,800 towns, cities, and villages, and way over 300,000. I've stopped counting now, but over 300,000 hits to the website. So if you're looking for sponsorship information, some really good stories, and it's all program, folks. There's no money being made. We're anonymous on the site, didn't work out that way in Facebook, but it's a good work, and it has the potential to help. So thank you so much for being on, and good night, and remember, we'll see you on the radio, rumradio.org. Good night.
Good night.
Good night.